The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
High and dry and out of the rain, it's so easy to hurt others when you can't feel pain. Kingsway get caught cold counting their cash and concede a quintuple of goals to Baysie. Meanwhile, Freo get themselves four. There's three naughty boys. Two is once again the worstliest lead that you've ever known. And we have one new managerial appointment to talk about and more on this week's Perth Football Podcast. We are back. Welcome back to you, dear gorgeous listeners, to the Perth Football Podcast. It is the 25th of March, 2024, after round two of the men's NPL in Western Australia. I am your host of the Perth Football Podcast, Sean Fry. I'm joined, as always, by the effervescent, the illustrious, the magnificent producer, Kalichi Osunwa. Kalichi, how are you, mate?
I don't know who that was going to go to, mate, but I appreciate that it's come to me. I'm doing well, Sean. Very well.
There's only one out of the three that it could come to, because the one of the other two is the greatest man. We don't need all of these other adjectives for him, because that's all he needs. Josh, try it. Josh, how are you?
How you doing, Sean? I'm not too bad. Not too bad at all.
I'm doing well, mate. Thank you very much. And then finally, Mr. Football is what we know and love him as. Had a wonderful call on Friday night. Terrific Sterling Perth game, which we'll get to in a minute. Tommy Dolman, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Tired. It's only, what, two rounds into the season. That's not a good sign, is it?
Tired, and you don't even have a newborn baby. So what is your excuse? Let's start with the Macron moment of the week. For the four of us, who wants to put their hand up? I'm going to just look for a hand in the air for who is going to go first before I throw it to Tommy Dolman for his Macron moment of the week. What was it, mate?
Well, someone's got to mention it. I almost feel a little bit unkind doing so, but poor Declan Reynolds. It's done the social media rounds today. The, fair to say, calamitous own goal for Kingsley West side. Is it Metro North Division 2 side? I'm not sure what the thought process was there. He was obviously trying a dangerous and risky switch of the play, but didn't quite.
He made the play outside the box.
Yeah, he didn't quite catch the pass how he intended, and it was probably an embarrassing moment, fair to say. So, shout out to Declan, and from what I've seen on social media, he's taken it in all pretty good fun.
Absolute shambles that we didn't get Chris Brady on to discuss this. Kalichi, you had a word on this before we get to yours.
I was just going to say, can you please just describe it for the listeners, please, Tommy, with all the best Tommy Dolman calls, describe it as a listeners and give us an idea of what you would have said in that moment as well.
Yeah, can you just call it like you're calling it live? Go for it, Tommy.
Well, I think it was really strange, because the ball sort of came back to the defender and he was deep in his own territory, basically on his own sort of byline, to the point where there was no pressure coming on him whatsoever. So this is normally the time in commentary when I'd look down at my notes and try and find something to fill the time, because nothing exciting's going to happen, surely. A bloke's going to turn around and probably clear it up the line in that situation most of the time. And instead the ball goes across goal to the goalkeeper, who then turns and the idea is clearly to help it on one more to the right back or to the centre back. And unfortunately it didn't get caught right, and it ended up just...
Tommy would be saying, "There's been a goal, Jeff," and Jeff would be saying, "Sorry, I was just looking at my notes." But yeah, you're right. That was crazy. And if only Brady were on to talk about it. But not sorry, Josh. Before we go to your moment of the week,
what do we think about the mentality for a team in Metro North Division 2 in Perth doing the Brighton, like, getting deep, trying to suck the other team up the pitch that they can exploit space in behind?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I love to see teams. I remember when we played the Galazzo 11 from our FIFA days, Kalichi, when we used to play FIFA tournaments at the pubs, and we got a bunch of FIFA players to just go down and play a 11 aside. Obviously, there are people having darts in the pregame warm-up. It was not a very professional performance, but my team was splitting the centre halves, having the defensive midfielder drop deep, and playing it out from the back. After 10 minutes, we were cooked. But no, I absolutely love that, and I think they should keep doing it. But Josh, what was your Macron moment of the week?
We'll go for another slightly embarrassing one. I think the fourth goal, the sealer from Perth Red Star in the night series final. Everybody's expecting Caitlin Douglas to take a shot. Nobody, and you can actually, and I'm not going to say who it was, but you can see the player on the video who should have been picking her up, but Olivia Woods peeled off the side. Caitlin Douglas has faked the shot. It is the easiest goal you'll ever get from a set piece. Poor Balcata. They were out of the game by that point anyway, but you could see the distress on Pete Rakic's face from about 100 metres away on the other side of the football centre.
I think those set pieces, those like pre-choreographed set pieces, should be a bigger part of football. I don't think that as an avenue has been tapped into enough. I want to see the full NFL in the Premier League, Kelechi. You are wanting to say some things here, but I want to see players making fake runs, fake shots, fake passes. I think there is so much to be tapped into in our beautiful game. Kelechi,
I'm suspicious it was pre-planned, but...
So, I don't. It wasn't pre-planned because she tells us in an interview afterwards, I felt that Olivia deserved a goal, so I thought I'd pass it to her, which is just like... It's just amazing to be like, look, I could put this in the top corner, but she deserves a goal. So let me just square it off to her and I know she'll score.
In general, Kelechi, you must be with me. There's a lot more can be done.
I am. I'm the group curmudgeon because as much as I love like 1-0 is plenty, I love antics and shithousery. So the idea of like all the weird celebrations that are all choreographed and in the row in the boat and all that kind of stuff, love it. And if we could do something like that with set pieces, absolutely love it as well. Especially where it involves someone like, you know, playing a screen and screen a defender and someone comes loose and scores, love it there. Except for when it happened to us against Maddington, where I got punched in the jaw and Cesar got the header. Except for that kind of stuff, don't appreciate that.
Yeah, punched in the jaw, I'm sure, is a lavish fact. Description of what happened.
No. Ask Jose.
What was your Macron moment of the week?
I was down at Ashfield. So got down to Ashfield and got to watch East Perth play Ashfield. Ashfield were the home team, and it was important for East Perth because it was obviously their first game in the State League. But I think it was just over 10 years ago, they were actually renting the ground from Ashfield while they were playing socials or I think potentially amateur Division 5. And so in the last 10 years, they've gone from being newly established to playing against Ashfield in a actual game in the State League, and they beat them. So yeah, it was just a touching kind of full circle moment for them, and they're doing some really dope stuff in the community as well. So that was my moment of the week.
Jenna, I think my Ashfield Ashfield Reserve might have been the ground that my Perth Broncos, my American football team, used to train on as well. So they've rented out their ground to a whole lot of schmucks. Are you going to ask me what my Macron moment of the week was?
Sean, what was your moment of the week? Your Macron moment of the week, sorry.
My Macron moment of the week was just a reintroduction to the unpredictability of the NPL. I obviously laughed full-throatedly at your hilariously bad tips last week. The three of you between you couldn't hit the backside of a barn with a banjo. And then it was my job this week, and I thought I'd go safe. And not having seen as much football with the newborn as I would have in other years, I thought I'll just go with Sportsbet's favourites for absolutely every single game. And then the very first game saw Perth Soccer Club 2-0 up. I actually thought they were two men up as well, but because Kelechi said in the group chat, Sterling are falling apart. And Tommy had mentioned the two red cards. So I thought, bloody beautiful. How easy is this? I was the only one of the four of us that had picked Perth. This is as easy as it gets. It's like taking candy from a baby, tipping against the three of you. I think I put something similar in the group chat, and then I ended the week with so close to zero tips after that Kieran Burns second half hat trick. But thankfully, Red Star salvaged me. I almost ended with zero, and I went the early pro, and reminded me to never go the early crow, particularly
humble pie
in the MTLWA. I'm not eating any humble pie. There's nothing humble about me, Kaliji. Yeah, just a reminder that what a league, what an absolutely crazy league, and that Sportsbet has absolutely no idea what they're doing. So just jump on and throw bets on the underdogs every single week and you'll make a fortune. That is it for our Macron moment of the week. And we will be back with part one after this. Part one, here we are, ready to go. We're going to kick off the running order with the absolute steamer of a game Friday night. Perth Soccer Club 2, Stirling Macedonia 3. Ninkovic from the spot. Perkins, it's an absolute beautiful header from Perkins, by the way. If anyone didn't see it, go and check out that. Just the set piece, the flick on to the far post, an absolute pearler in the 22nd minute before a pair of what, Kaliji, hit that sound bite, the clacks, or whatever we're going to call it.
Now, you listen here. He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty
or
boy.
Or girl, of course. This time, of course, it was boys. We're in the NPL men's And what a way to start the weekend with a couple of naughty boys. Tommy, you might as well tell us about it because your dulcet tones were calling the game on Friday night. What happened?
Well, it was 2 second yellow cards and they were both separate incidents, I should add. The first second yellow card was given to Federico Achille. The second booking was for a late challenge and poor old Federico was nowhere near the ball. I think he could probably admit that in the cold light of day. And it was probably a little unfortunate for him because the first booking that he got was for not retreating as Calvin Whitney was trying to take a quick free kick. So that it was more that he put himself in that position by getting that yellow card. And then obviously the seconds fell soon after. But Perth didn't have to play too long with a man down, thankfully, because Dejan Spasiewski also picked up a second yellow card right before halftime, for an incident that was a little bit off the ball. And I didn't quite see the first yellow card was for a late challenge and the second one was for a little bit of off the ball stuff, which was sort of happening in the penalty area and not where the free kick taker was. So I'm not 100% sure what actually happened there because it's not actually on camera because it's been focused on the free kick taker. But anyway, both teams went down to 10 men and actually was pretty important in how the game turned out because it became a lot more open after the restart.
Let me ask
Stirling got back in the game.
Because Kaliji, that's a friend of the pod, Dejan Spasiewski. Have you been in touch with him about what actually happened? Have you got the word?
Oh, no.
Out, so to speak?
I haven't been in touch, but I did do some journalistic investigation. And it was a bit of how's your father, a bit of elbowing, a bit of jostling off the ball. And I think I think referee Shane's gonna caught him in the act as he nudged, shall we say, the opponent. But the other interesting thing about those two boys getting sent off is they both work with each other at First Kick Australia, a little company which is the one of those ones that do like before school and after school soccer, so kids can get a little taste of what it's like and good
focus on sportsmanship.
To see that they're teaching kids all the right important things of that off the ball red card there from Dejan Spasiewski. Absolutely love to see it.
All right, diving out of the naughty boys back into the game. Substitute Kieran Byrne making it 3-2. Not one. Obviously, he did it once. He did it twice. He did it a third time. Scored a hat-trick, some great goals. The second, I think, was a header from probably outside the box, and the goalkeepers probably should do better from there. But other than that, a couple of great goals either side of that. One that I think we're probably going to get used to hearing this season, Calvin Whitney to Kieran Byrne, and a cracking finish to make it 3-2. Tommy, you called it Burn Baby Burn on the commentary. Was that a Disco Inferno reference or an Ash reference for the 90s kids?
It was actually a Stirling Inferno in the second half, sure, and that's what it was. Because
Jesus Christ. They got, someone because, shut this guy up.
Because they, Because they just got completely on top and rode the wave of momentum, and you took a central midfielder from each team out of the game, and suddenly a lot of space opened up in the middle of the park, and that's when Giles Davies and Calvin Whitney really came into their own, and they dominated the middle of the park for those early stages of that second half. And then when Ian Ferguson did introduce Kieran Byrne and the fresh legs of Kai Matthews, Louis Hadfield was a half-time substitute as well, youngster from Red Star. They just played with a lot more dynamism, and getting those guys on the ball was crucial. And in my opinion, Perth took a little bit too long to react to that. They did bring on Josh Keller later in the second half, but I think it was too little too late by then. And in the end, they were just riding the wave of momentum, Sterling. And in the end, they probably deserved the win, even though Perth were pretty good in that first half and didn't really give Sterling much of a chance. It was certainly a game of two halves, that's for sure.
Well, if you want a deeper dive into that, Perth Soccer Club 2, Sterling Macedonia 3, that is on the Full Time Whistle podcast, which will be part of our Patreon package for our subscribers throughout the season. Instant reaction, often the evening of the games, certainly the morning after the games. It'll be one or two games a week, depending on availability of our professional pundits that we have here. But yeah, please do subscribe if you haven't already. They are free for the first 3 weeks. So check out those Full-Time Whistles. If it's something you want to listen to, do subscribe. But yeah, as I said, it was a shock to me. Perth Soccer Club, I was crowing about that 2-0 lead as the only Perth tipper. And then great Scott, it was 3-2 after the second half. Speaking of great Scott's Kelechi, the greatest Scott in the league was on show. Was he? For Bayswater 5, Kingsway 1, a hat-trick for none other than Gordon Smith, Golden Boot medal leader for 2024. Is he the greatest Scotsman the league's ever seen?
Look, I'm not prone to be one who, you know, engages in hyperbole, however, I've just done a quick search, mate, and there's only one Scotsman in the league who has a Wikipedia page.
But hang on, just let me check Wikipedia. Let me just type Daryl Nicol. Yeah, nothing.
Nah, nothing.
Nothing.
Nah.
Okay.
There's only one.
Well, so you're saying yes. Tommy, you're saying maybe he's not the greatest the league's ever seen, but you're saying he's going to be very, very important. There's a lot of other firepower in that team they have now with Tease and Nasmo, Jackson. And you're thinking, even though he scored a hat-trick in this game, you're saying he and his ability to be more of a playmaker might be as useful as his goals to Bayswater this season.
Well, all good strikers need a conduit to sort of play through from the midfield through that attacking third, and Smith is very much that guy that gets in between the lines and he finds space in intelligent fashion. And you're going to have guys like Jackson and Tease and Nasmo all bringing different things to the party, but Smith really is the unique player in that setup who can sort of drop in and play that creative role as well. And we mentioned this last season, but he was phenomenal for Bayswater last season. I thought he was part of the reason why they almost made the top four. He hit double figures in goals, and he's off the mark with a hat-trick this season as well. So, yeah, he seems to be a player that's getting better and better, and he's going to be very important as the season wears on.
Well, go on with your question for the panel, Tommy. You said you wanted to ask us something on the back of Byrne and Smith.
Well, I was just wondering what the greatest hat-trick all of you boys has ever seen.
Go on, Josh.
Have you ever heard the song Strachan by The Hitchers, Tommy?
I have not.
So Strachan's a song about a famous Leeds United player, Gordon Strachan, who you guys may know.
Surely know then.
I know the player, I've just not heard the song.
So it's a kitchen sink opera where a guy settling down to, an Irish bloke settling down to watch Leeds United play, and his girlfriend comes in and starts an argument as the game starts playing. And the whole time, basically the story of the song is the whole time his girlfriend's trying to start up an argument, but he's only focused on Strachan scoring not one, not two goals, but a hat-trick. And by the time he scores the third goal, it's like the absolute crescendo of the song. Guitar solo comes in. He doesn't care about the fight anymore. He's just celebrating Gordon Strachan's magical, magical hat trick.
As obscure and weird as I could possibly expect from the greatest man, Kelechi, what's the greatest hat trick you ever seen in football?
I want to say Luis Suarez against Norwich.
But don't, because that's still in mind. So.
But then, just for Needle and for the activities that I was up to that night, the Mohamed Salah hat trick against Manchester United at Old Trafford. If you know, you know.
Okay, so for those that know, for those, I'm assuming two listeners, maybe one to this podcast, have that. As alluded to, I would choose Luis Suarez, not for his hat trick against Norwich, but for his hat trick of hat tricks against Norwich. I have never seen anything like it. Favourite goal amongst the 12 I think he scored in that handful of games was maybe two from halfway or the one from 35 yards, or there were just all the one where he's missed an easy chance and the Norwich fans are giving him pelters and then the goalkeeper passes it straight to him and he smashes it in. But there was just one that I think is one of the most underrated goals that I've ever seen, where the ball sort of comes over his shoulder, bounces, and it's just this tiny little movement he makes like he's about to shoot and the defender just sort of loses balance. He does a little shimmy, takes an extra step, smashes the top corner from 25 yards. And you just see the Norwich supporters, fans, but just everyone, players just looking around going, what can we do with this guy?
There was some absurd stat about him scoring something like 5% of all the goals Norwich had conceded in the Premier League at some point. It was stupid.
Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous. But back to the local stuff, guys. That was basically a 5 Kingsway 1. Kingsway obviously crashing down to earth.
Can I just say about that result? It was interesting because Cam T started in that team as well, and so they had a front. They had a front three of Cam T, Chris Jackson, who was very unselfish in this game and managed to still get 2 goals. So huge shout out to Wacko Jacko, and Sammy Dway. So a very attacking formation, and they've still. I think he comes back this week. Hargreaves, I think he comes back after he got that suspension at the end of the night series final. So yeah, he might be back. Might be back for the next game or the game after. So the fact that they're able to get this result without their most important player, probably a decent result for them.
And just worth saying as well, Bayswater got there too. Kingsway did take the lead in this game, but Bayswater got 2 goals in basically a minute to turn the game on its head. And that's an absolute coach killer for David Tough and Ross Edwards. You know, you've just conceded a goal and you sort of think, right, let's just be smart here. Let's respond and let's sort of play with a little bit of, calmness. But then to essentially turn it over straight from your own kickoff, 10, 20 seconds after the restart, and then to concede, that must have just been a real hammer blow. And I'm sure they'll be doing some defensive work on the training track during the week after that.
Got to knock the stuffing out of you after that huge win in round one. They're obviously bouncing after that, and whatever the opposite of bouncing is in round two, not bouncing, I guess. The next game, Josh, you wanted to tell us why Fremantle City 4, Armidale 1 was a huge game for Fremantle. It was a late goal against a run of play for Alex McLean in the first half to make it 1-0. Armidale having the best of it, you said, and then that goal obviously knocking the stuffing out of them and Fremantle running away. 4-1 winners, McLean again, Alex Siller and Dylan White scoring for Fremantle. There was a consolation goal for the Canuck, Riley Wishart Stevens for Armidale. But other than that, it was all Fremantle second half. And what does this game mean to Fremantle, Josh, and why was it so important?
I think it was big for the club. So, you know, it was their first game back in, it was their first ever home game in men's NPL competition for the side. But they've obviously got links to the old East Fremantle Tricolore from the merger that happened a few years ago, which brought Fremantle United and East Fremantle had sort of reformed as a social and women's and junior club a few years ago. And the old East Fremantle Tricolore, you know, they used to be one of the biggest clubs
in Perth. They were an Italian club formed around the fishing community down there, and came into the league in the mid-1950s. I think they were basically, you know, the next strongest, next most successful team after the Azzurri. And then they actually merged with Perth Azzurri and Balcatta to form Perth Italia when they were hoping to get the team into the NSL back in the early 90s. So it was about something like 37 years since there'd been a men's top flight game in that side of Fremantle. I wasn't there for the befores, but apparently there was a lot of celebration, a lot of pageantry before the game. People about midway through the first half were a bit concerned that it may have deflated some of the players, a little bit too much energy going around the place, too much expectation. But that sensational header from Alex McLean, who we had an interview with on the Full-Time Whistle a couple of days ago, that just changed the entire course of affairs.
I just wanted to ask Josh as well. We spoke about Western Knights and how important their home ground advantage is going to be this season. Did you sort of get that vibe when you were down at Hilton Park at the weekend? Because it looked like it was a pretty good crowd there from what I saw.
Yeah, well, that's why I tipped them. Because I looked at the Western Knights result from last week and it got me thinking about Nottingham Forest rolling West Ham a couple of years ago. And when you haven't been up in the top flight for a while, or in Fremantle City's case, technically ever, that first home game is just full of emotion, and it can push your team across the line, even when they might not be playing that well. So not I think, I mean, they were very good in the second half. I thought Charlie Colchaz, will have to check that. I think his teammates Chechles. Just call him Chechles. His teammates just call him Charlie Checkers. Because they can't remember.
So Aussie. Classic. You can't be bothered with the pronunciation. Just
that's the Labuschagne right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Josh, before we duck off to
he was very good, though.
We've got Mark from Peak Performance, and then we'll be back with part two. You grabbed an interview with this after this game. I'll let you introduce that, and then we'll duck off for the break.
Well, I mentioned it before, but I guess we're giving it to the good people again. Alex McLean and Alex Silla, who returned from, really hasn't played very much in about 20 months, the former Perth SC champion, and he scored with just about his first touch of the ball back in the top flight. Josh here from the Perth Football Podcast. A blustery day. We got the Freo Doctor blowing through, but it was Fremantle City who blew through their opposition, Armidale Football Club, 4-1. The first time in 37 years that we've seen football down in this part of top flight football down in this part of Fremantle since the dissolution of the old or merger of the old East Fremantle Tricolore into Perth Italia almost four decades ago. Alex McLean, Alex Silla, two of the goal scorers here with me. Must be an absolutely massive occasion for yourselves as the club, as a club, and especially getting a 4-1 victory against an established NPL side like Armidale.
Yeah, obviously it's an exciting day for the club. Obviously the first NPL game in the club's history makes it special coming up from State League after a good season last year. But today I think we started off pretty poor. The first half we were pretty lucky to go in at 1-0 at half time. But second half, change of formation, and I think we're the better team by miles. Obviously scoring four goals, can't ask for much more.
In two sensational goals from you, Alex, the brilliant header off Pat Lowry's cross, and the great finish into the top corner after the layoff from Robbie Petkov. For yourself, it's been a long journey back into the NPL. You were with the 20s at Bayswater a few years ago. You've been at Forestfield. You've been down at Freo for a couple of years. What does it mean to be back making your mark at the NPL level after being down to the State League for a couple of seasons?
Yeah, so firstly, obviously starting the season with three goals now, just getting in them positions from number 10. I know Pat's always going to put the ball in the box for me, and then Rob's going to hold it up for me and set me off for a shot. Obviously it's been a couple of years in the State League, leaving Basie just to get some minutes in the first team, get my confidence up and everything, and now back in the NPL, yeah, couldn't be happier, and, you know, it makes it a bit better, beating AV, my old Bayswater coach, so obviously winning a lot of trophies there makes it special.
Alan Vernals, I'm sure he'll have the opportunity to try and get the wood over you later in the season. Alex Silla, for you, a little bit of a different story. 2 years really basically written off by injury after that fantastic season you have for Perth a couple seasons ago. What did it mean to get back on the pitch and score with what was probably close to your first touch out there, playing an unfamiliar role in the 10?
It was pretty awesome. Hey, it's been a really long 20 months, and lots of ups, lots of downs, but you do it all again for moments like that. Such a special day for myself, but more importantly, the club. First game in the NPL and against Armidale, who, you know, have had a great night series and have signed some good players. So it gives us lots of confidence going into the rest of the season.
And 4 points in two games to start off the season. You must be feeling pretty sprightly, but then any level-headed, media-trained footballer would tell you, it's a long campaign to come.
It is. And we know from my time at Perth that you can start the season however you want, but it's what matters at the end of the season. And, you know, we've had two really good games to start the season, four tough ones to come up, so we'll be looking to grab lots more points.
All right, thank you very much, lads. Go enjoy the celebrations.
Thank you.
Here we are. Now, the chuckles are for something that you listening will never know. But we are back. Before we dive back into part two, with a very, very special guest, Mark Madison. He is a physiotherapist and director of Peak Performance. Peak Performance, absolutely fantastic company, making sure all of you, even Kalichi, can perform at your peak. Isn't that right, Mark?
That is right. I'm back here for the second time. I believe you had a stand-in for me last week with our good Dr. Aaron Gregory, our podiatrist, but myself this week. So here to sort of talk a little bit more about players' typical injuries for in reference to most of the age groups, different age groups, and what those tend to be are, how they can be managed a little bit better, and of course some questions from yourselves.
Okay, before we dive into your talk on the most common injuries, I just want to throw a question to the panel. What's the best injury or the worst injury or the funny? You could take it however you want, but an injury that stuck in your mind, either from your playing days or your watching days. Everyone is looking like they don't quite have an answer yet for this. So
I have an answer.
Kalichi's camera's blacked out, so I was going to throw to him anyway. So what have you got, Kalichi?
There was a person in one of the football teams that I played for who went out, and this was around the time the Pharrell song Get Lucky was out.
Right.
And he right. may have gotten himself lucky. But while in the act, he pulled his hamstring. So he had to explain to the coach what on earth he was doing to pull his hamstring and which kind of weird shapes and sizes he was contorting himself into.
So, Mark, as a professional physiotherapist, what is the kind of position that someone would most like? Max, sorry, I'm joking. I will take the obvious one. That is Phil Babb sliding nut first into the Anfield goalpost. Probably the funniest injury I've ever seen. Josh.
That's nothing to laugh about, Sean.
Give us an not if you're on the receiving end, but the rest of us can have a good old short. There was, what was that game, Tommy? We had one where we were commentating on. It was an amateur game, and a guy got hit right on in the unmentionables, and you didn't want to talk about it on the commentary because you wanted to stay professional. And we only had one microphone. We were passing it back and forth between the two of us. And I was just like, Tommy, give me the mic. I want to talk about this. And which game was that? Do you remember? I think it was Curtin or something.
Remember.
Oh, you are such a professional dad. Yeah, carry on, Josh. Josh, you go on for us.
I was trying to think of the player who missed a game or got injured because they left eggs in the microwave and they exploded. And I've actually found a Guardian article explaining this. Walter Smith, the Rangers manager, today confirmed that Kirk Broadfoot suffered burns after an egg exploded in his face. The Scotland defender was inspecting two eggs he had just poached in his microwave when one of them blew up and squirted scalding hot water into his face. The 25-year-old was treated at hospital for scalding to his cheek after the incident on Sunday, but was otherwise unhurt. He's expected to make a full recovery. Smith said he's got some facial burns, but he should be okay. This is the best part, I think. The former St. Mirren fullback who joined the Irish club in 2007 is currently out injured with a foot problem.
A foot problem that I'm sure our friend from last week from Peak Performance could have sorted
Aaron
out.
Would have been grateful.
Aaron would have fixed that up straight away. Tommy, have you got a quick one before we get into the serious stuff with Mark?
No, I broke my finger playing at the old Bouncer Sports Centres. You might remember up in Joondalup, they have the green nets that surround the courts, and I got absolutely poleaxed in a crunching challenge, lost my balance. My gut instinct was to put my arm out to grab onto the net, just so I didn't fall and land on my face. And my fingers got tangled in the net and my finger went cluck. And that was about it. No more trust detail needs to be said.
Trust you to have the most boring story of of a lot of us, Tommy. So let's go. We do have Mark Madison, head physiotherapist at Peak Performance here to talk to us about the injuries that footballers tend to suffer, the way they develop sort of over the age groups. And you wanted to sort of just give us a general summary of that quick progression from young to middle age to elderly, probably quite significant for Colucci and I as we traverse through middle age and head towards elderly at a breakneck speed. How does that differ? What are the things that are more common in those age groups?
So I'll probably start off with younger people first. Usually I find that younger generations, young kids don't tend to get too many injuries. They tend to be a bit more of your soft tissue stuff, just bumps and bruises. But as kids start to grow and they get those growth spurts coming on board, you'll find that their bones get longer first. And then secondary, their muscles are trying to keep up with their bone length. As a result, what happens, they end up with these super tight muscles, usually in their legs. So quads, hamstrings sometimes, calves, and then they'll end up with these issues around knees, around ankles, those sort of issues where those muscles are trying to struggle to keep up. And kids still stretch. But I find that the best way to actually help them is to get them on the foam roller. If the foam roller is too uncomfortable, I say to them, go in your mum's kitchen drawer, get out the rolling pin and actually use that up and down the leg. And it's amazing how many of them do, but I say, whatever you do, don't use the deep heat and put it back in the kitchen drawer. Right?
Give it a wash.
Yeah, give it a wash first, okay? Otherwise, you don't want your next pastry tasting like deep heat. That's for sure.
That has just reminded me of a story that I like to tell my a lot of my clients. I do a lot of support work, disability support work, and I have clients who, for some reason or another, feel silly about something they've done or judge themselves a little bit too harshly against the rest of us. And I'll always tell them the story about how I there was a bottle of deep heat in the bathroom, and I sprayed it on the toothbrush and started brushing my teeth with it. And it wasn't until, 3 or 4 seconds into the brush that I realized it was not toothpaste. So, that was a horrible moment. But carry on and go on into those middle ages. Where do those injuries start sort of looking like when you start getting a bit older?
So then the middle ages, they tend to come with people trying to push for performance. So they're trying to go harder, they're trying to go bigger, stronger, and they're just overloading themselves. And usually they're also tendon issues. So they usually tend to get those issues more towards their late 20s, mid to late 20s, and their tendons are starting to get really irritated. So they'll end up with Achilles. You know, have you ever had an Achilles tendinopathy? I have. I'm even too old for an Achilles tendinopathy these days. So yeah, go on, Josh. What's that?
I had adductor tendinopathy. Starting when I was 28, turning 29.
Bingo. Perfect age range. You know, those late 20s, early 30s, that's where those people are taking on too much load and everything's just locking up. They're doing too much training. They're not recovering enough. I find that most people are trying to get in that peak range, even the guys in other sports, so and ladies in other sports, AFL, you know, soccer, rugby, they would do pretty close 50% recovery to their 50% active work in their total training. And that recovery work is just as important, especially in your late 20s.
So, is it also doing a lot of gym work as well? Are they going to the gym too hard? They're not stretching enough? They're not doing enough?
Exactly. So that's where I usually find that it's a chronic problem, so chronic meaning over a time. So when they have those issues that are you know, they've been really sore in and around joints. It's often a tendon that's sore and inflamed. The other one is patellar tendinopathy. So that's the part where joins your kneecap to the top of your shin, and you'll find that gets sore and inflamed. And they come in and you can literally tap or touch the tendon and it's swollen, it's niggled, there's even fluid around it. So we tend to get that to calm down first, you know, deload the player, take them down from their training load, give them a chance to recover. Sometimes physios like to give isometric work, which is exercise where you hold a position. That tends to regenerate the tendon, rebuild the tendon. But the other good thing to do is release the muscle that's attached to the tendon. So, for example, if it is that quadriceps, so where that quadriceps, the front of the thigh goes down to the kneecap, and then that kneecap tendon gets sore, release your quads. And as I said before, you know, getting that rolling pin out of mum's drawer or folks' drawer or the wife's, you know, kitchen drawer or your kitchen drawer if you're the chef in the house, you know, getting that out, releasing those quads, releasing those hamstrings. I've had a hamstring tendinopathy before I was a physiotherapist, and I had it for 18 months and tried to push through, and it was not happy. And in the end, I tore my hamstring. So, and that was when I started to do the proper rehab. But no one told me what to do, how to get rid of it. And through the bad stuff that ended up happening, bad injury, I rebuilt it over the summer and got back and got rid of the tendinopathy. Yeah. The other thing, ACLs. Now, ACLs are common in those middle-aged players as they're trying to push, turn, twist. And usually you find the people that do ACLs are those with poor change of direction techniques, or their knees drift inwards towards each other when they're doing their squats, lunges, step-ups. They haven't got that strength in and around their hips, which pull their knees back out.
Now can you please let Kalichi know what he's got to look forward to as he heads into your elderly category? What are the things you look for as footballers or people that just want to stay fit?
I'm a cyclist now, Sean.
Well, all cyclists, maybe whatever, but probably one of the things you would suggest is move into lower impact sports like cycling. But what are the injuries you see most frequently, and very quickly, what steps can people take to minimise the risks of those?
Yeah, those issues that you tend to see are the worst with more mature players, shall we say, Kalichi, is that right?
Yes, yes.
He's not very wiser. Mature. That's the wrong choice of words, but carry on.
Yeah, so the more mature players, and I'm afraid this is myself these days, are hamstrings and calves. So moving away from the tendons and more in the middle of the tissue, how many times would you see a mature player and they've pulled their calf right in the middle of the muscle or the hamstring? Ping, goes. And I see them time and time again. The guys in their 30s trying to play sports still, or they've gone to the mature 30? Cup.
Wait a minute. We were talking about elderly here, Mark. That's not the
30s. Sure, you mean late 30s.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the mature cup, what is that in soccer terms? Is that over 35s, over 45s?
Yeah, over 35s.
Cristiano Ronaldo will tell you he's got another 15 years before he gets in that category, but carry on. Yeah,
it's amazing what blood transfusions can do, isn't it? So in reference to that, you know, building your strength around all the muscles in the legs in the off season. I think I said this to you in the original podcast, getting your good preseason in at the start, making sure you get some massage into it, you know, see your remedial massage therapist once a month. You know, if you've got it there on your health insurance, use it. I find that the people that get those massages and keep their muscles soft and supple avoid most of those injuries I've talked about today. So where their tightness can be reduced in those younger players, the middle-aged players that tend to get the tendon issues, the tendon issue comes about with that tight middle muscle that stopped working, their tendon's trying to take over the load. And then the mature players, they're the ones that tend to have everything locked up and then something goes. You know, there's that change of direction. They don't have the nervous system that is responsive as it used to be. And then they load too much, change the direction, or trying to accelerate or decelerate. Usually it's as they're taking off, the calf or a hamstring goes. So, Kalichi, if you're running, don't run too fast, okay?
Just finally, Mark. Yeah, Kelechi, stop going so fast, mate. You're too quick for the rest of us.
That's right.
You said, so these are the differences between young, middle-aged and elderly, and you've also hinted at the start there is a difference in injuries between male and female athletes as they go. And I assume this is probably something that's been a little bit underappreciated over the last couple of decades, but what are the things that, in particular, our female listeners, as they progress through that journey, have to look out for and what can they do?
Now, you'll be thankful to hear that FIFA have adapted a program that helps prevent ACL injuries for women players and junior soccer players in general. The ladies tend to get this issue because of a structural difference in pelvis width. So ladies' pelvis is a little bit wider. And then as a result, there tends to be a bigger angle. And they call that the Q angle. That's the difference between the foot position being narrower compared to the pelvis. Now, guys, we don't tend to have that wider pelvis, so the Q angle isn't so extreme, and the ladies have a larger Q angle. Now, that then causes the knees to come in, and we get a rotational force and that force dipping in on the knees. So that is that change of direction. You'll hear about AFL players, soccer players, rugby players that do their knee, ACL goes, when they're changing direction and no one has even tackled them, no one's bumped into them, no one's grabbed them. This is more common in ladies, and ladies are at a higher risk of doing ACLs over men for the same number of players playing the game. And thankfully, FIFA now have got a program where they recognise these poor techniques in younger players, and it's especially popular with the younger ladies' teams. And a lot of colleges in the US tend to use it in their soccer programs. And it's all to do with change of direction, hip strength, and making sure that players are educated on how to change direction with a healthy foot position. Yes, Barry.
And I know that the with male footballers in particular, AFL players, it was a huge blight on ruckmen specifically, but the taller players, heavier players. Is it the same in women, that the taller footballers tend to have that same injury more, or is it more across the board with
I think it's more, it's not necessarily the taller players that do it. It tends to be the players that change direction more in soccer because of it, that midfield position being more of a medium-sized player and that faster player. It tends to be those sort of players in soccer. I could be wrong, but with usually the change of direction is the big issue in soccer. I know numerous soccer players, both male and female, that have done ACLs. And nearly always the last straw that breaks the camel's back is the actual change of direction, non-tackled, and they go to ground like a sack of spuds. And it's in the midfield when they're trying to dodge another player.
Yeah. All right. Very interesting. Thank you so much, Mark, from Peak Performance.
Thank
you. Before
you
get back to your Monday evening, how can people get in touch with you? How do they get in touch with Peak Performance? What can you do for them?
Yeah, so down at Peak Performance, we're located on Cambridge Street in West Leederville. Please come down, check us out. Good coffee on board.
Terrific coffee.
We're more than happy to have a chat to people. Yep, great coffee machine. Mark Shaughnessy there, he's one of our team down there. He's great at making coffee, and he'll be terrible that I've dobbed him in for this because he is really good at it. I get him to make my coffee every day he's there. So come down, have a coffee. Get a tour of the place, see what we're about. We've got a nice ice bath in there, infrared sauna, lots of recovery options, not just physiotherapy, not just chiro, not just podiatry. Pretty much all your allied health practitioners under one roof. Jay, willing to help you become a peak performer. What else can I say?
All right. And tell us again, who are you for? Who are you targeted at? Are you the absolute amateurs, the absolute professionals, everyone in between? What's your market?
All and everyone. We have everyone to young kids playing sports, retirees wanting to go trek up Machu Picchu, you know, all those sort of tasks. Whatever you want to do to become a peak performer or better than where you are currently, that's what it's about. And we're willing to help you get there and get there well beyond your means and enjoy life. That's the important thing.
Well, as someone who has absolutely no designs on heading up Machu Picchu, Mark, thank you very much for joining us. and we'll look forward to having you on the next time.
No worries, guys. Thanks a lot to Perth Football Podcast and the team there and to all the listeners. Come down. Got any questions, give us a hoy. More than happy to answer them for you.
All right. We'll be back with part two after this. And we're bloody back, ladies and gentlemen. Part two. Fantastic to have Mark from Peak Performance on to tell us all how to avoid injuries. My method of performing injuries is to just not do any exercise at the moment. And that's working out very well for me. But if you are one of those people that needs to be out there and active, get down to Peak Performance in West Leadville, they're a fantastic bunch. Let's get into part two now, gentlemen. Kalichi's having some internet difficulties. So it's just the greatest man, Josh Chiat, and Mr. Football, Tommy Dolman, with me to discuss Red Star 2, Balcatta 1, a game not exciting just for the fact that it had my naughty boy of the year, Dennis Gallen, getting in the naughty boy book, as I think we could have all predicted. But, well, I mean, let's... Are we trying to be right or are we trying to be exciting, Josh? Because we just knew it would happen. Ben Hinchelwood scored from the spot in the first half. And then two young guns, Theo Leeming, formerly a southerner, gone way up north. And then Matt George made it 2-1 after that red card we discussed earlier to Dennis Gallen. Now, Josh, before we dive into it, we are a big dog zone family here. We love the Dogzos. We talk about Dogzos all the time. Listeners probably know by now that is a denial of a goal scoring opportunity. My partner Maddie still thinks it's either Phoebe Bowl or Happy, one of her little Dogzos. But this game and the red card to Dennis Gallen, I thought initially, as Tommy did when we watched the replay, I thought it was for the tackle, and I thought that is one of the worst refereeing decisions I have ever seen in my life. And I was wondering how, as a staunch defender of the officials, I could come on this podcast and defend that decision. I was going to thinking about maybe the angle, maybe had a player blocking his vision, maybe something, maybe the linesman also at the same time had a player blocking his vision. But then I realized that was not Dennis Gallen making the tackle. I believe it was Blair Govan. I think Tommy just nodded if I'm correct. And then I went back and rewatched it, and Dennis was sort of halfway between ball player and striker as the ball was played, and just seemed to move his arm down a little bit towards the ball. Looked like an intentional handball to me. Looked like a very good spot for the official, so I don't have to go to any lengths to defend the official. I think he did a very, very good job, and it was a great call. But it wasn't a dog, though, Josh. We believe it was a spar, and the boys have never had a spar together. Tell us what a spar is and how they've spotted a spar there.
So a spar is parlance for stopping a promising attack, which is probably something that you've heard commentators say on the Premier League coverage or the A-League coverage, that they've stopped a promising attack. And what that means is that a good attacking situation is unfolding that they might go on to get a chance from, but it's not one that's going to create an obvious or it doesn't appear to be an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. I mean, the most obvious stopping a promising attack calls are when, you know, the bloke's given up the ball on halfway and he just gets a little tug of the shirt.
Or the Sheila, mate. Or the Sheila.
Well, no, yeah, sorry. My bad. Yeah. I'm a sexist. The bloke or the Sheila gives the little tug of the shirt on halfway and the player running through turns around to the referee and goes, "What's that, ref?"
This one.
And I think people get the idea, like a pull of the shirt is a yellow card, and that's not actually the case. It's about the impact of it.
So we're every dogzo, we're going to go around the panel and say whether or not we thought it was a dogzo. We'll do the same with the spars. No complaints about this spar, Josh?
I don't think so. It looked like a classic hand angle to me.
Tommy?
Yeah, no complaints.
Yeah, I think the referee... Who was the referee? Do we know? Should give him a shout out. Did a good job, I think, there. If Tommy doesn't know, then we won't know. But whoever the referee was there up at Perth Red Star, Balcatta, he did a sterling job. As good of a job as Red Star did, battling back from a goal down. how a game can change when you lose a man, guys. But in this case, for the better. I don't know. I didn't catch any of this game, but Tommy or Josh, whoever wants to jump in, how did Red Star turn this around late, a man down, and salvage me one tip from the round?
I think it's just one of those things where psychologically, because you've gone a player down, you almost feel more empowered to go more gung-ho than you would do with 11. I know it probably means nothing and it's probably completely wrong, but there's maybe just this little psychological thing. And from a Balcata perspective, maybe they also thought, okay, Red Star have got a player less. Now it's going to be easy for us to maybe manage this game. But obviously they were maybe a little bit too conservative with their approach in the later stages of the game. But look, this was a game that had plenty of chances at both ends. But ultimately, Balcata, I'm sure, will be kicking themselves. They weren't able to get something out of the game. And Red Star just showed why they're the champions, or the defending champions, rather. They just managed to pull results out of the fire when they're seemingly in bad positions. And to your point before, Sean, Theo Leeming and Matty George doing the job. We've been so used to seeing Daryl Nicol chop down these guys, Andy Higgins, delivering over the years, and it's really encouraging for Callum Salmon that a couple of the youngsters are stepping up and making their
thoughts
mark
on
and
this
putting
one,
points on the board.
Josh?
Well, I just think that sometimes... Can you hear me? Because I'm a little bit stalled. No, I'm back.
Yeah,
I'm
man,
back.
Yeah, you go
I'm
for
back,
it.
Baby. I just think that sometimes when you do lose that player, and maybe particularly if you're chasing the game, you probably drop the player out of midfield. And it almost, for a team that plays the ball like Red Star, you're almost forced to be a bit more direct and go forward, be a bit more gung-ho, as you suggested. And obviously, we've just got a... Unfortunately, Kalichi is a mute right now, but he's just sent through a little tidbit for us on the chat about Balcata. 2 weeks in a row, they've dropped points, and big points it is, from winning positions. 2-1 up last week against Fremantle, having gone down, I think, 1-0 initially in that one. And 1-0 up against Red Star very, very, very late in this one. Sean Fry.
Absolutely. And then the team that were roundly panned to be relegated, the team that I believe all three of you said you hated from the fiery depths of your heart, but from the reactions that I've heard, a team that you want to go down, you despise, you hate, Floriade Athena. They are undefeated after two rounds, and I love the boys down at Floriade Athena. I don't know what you guys were on week one before I was here, but you made a few people angry. But they have won round one. They've come into round two and had a 1-1 draw.
Where would you have had them? Where would you have had them if you'd been on the debut show?
I wasn't here. I don't like to rewrite history, Josh, so I'm not going to dive back. I don't deal in hypotheticals. I just take sports bets tips and I just take them as my opinion. But it was Perth Glory 1, Floriade Athena 1. Nick Ambrosio smashed in from a set piece early on, and then an equaliser before the half hour from Jalen Pearman made it 1-1, and then that was it. But Tommy Dolman, you're saying early days, both are undefeated, and both will win the league. Is that correct?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I thought it was just probably worth giving them both a shout out, because I know it's only two games, but they're both undefeated, and I think we were all a little bit, not necessarily concerned, but I think we were all maybe thinking that it was going to be a bit of a season of change and rebuild. But yeah, two games in, it looks like they've both got a little bit of cloud about them. And as we know with this league, it's a very unpredictable one. I was just hoping that somebody was going to come on the podcast and hastily overreact to two games and jump all aboard the Glory or Floriade Express, toot toot. So we'll see what yourself or Josh or have to say about that.
All I have to say is it's just another one of those Glory games. It's a tight, low-scoring contest, as we've become accustomed to seeing from this young Glory side. Well, certainly from this new young Glory side, or this young Glory side. I'm rambling, but we'll move on. We'll see what happens. I don't think anyone's drawing great conclusions from the first two rounds. But Floriade, certainly, the one thing I will say is that they don't look like they're just going to roll over and let the rest of the league tickle their bellies. They want to stay here. They want to push for top four, and they got a bit of a chip on their shoulder, Josh.
Yeah, look, just two things. Just little bit disappointed in the lack of action we've seen from Friday Zico so far. I've heard he's only gotten about 5 minutes at the end of the two games so far. And if our Friday Zico shot counter is going to be a thing, he's probably going to need a little bit more time to impact the game.
What was he saying? He said he scores from 1 in 3 outside the box.
I can't confirm or deny that, but Kelechi can.
I know. He was happy to go on record with this. I think his claim was he scores from 1 in 3 shots from outside the box.
1 in 3 shots from outside. Yeah, it's not 1 in 3 are on target. It's 1 in 3 are in the net.
1 in 3 shots. And so at the moment, I think he's 0 from 0, which is currently undefined, but is on track for his.
Yeah, he may have had 1 or 2 he might pops be right. But my other point was going to be set pieces. We actually got the stat from one of the Glory coaches during the week and went back and watched all of the goals from the first round of the competition. Of the 15 goals that were scored, he reckoned 10 came from restart situations. So goal kicks, wow, corners, free kicks, I think restart non-penalty situations. So set pieces have been a big factor, and I think all three goals that have been scored in Glory games so far this season, both for and against them, have been set piece goals.
And before we wrap up, the final game of the weekend was another 1-0 victory. Well, no, the first one was a 1-0 victory. This was a 0-1 victory for the pedants out there. Western Knights, 2 in a row, 2 clean sheets, 2 wins by a single goal, this time over Inglewood. It was in the opposite form, not just in home and away terms, but in the timing of the goals. They got the very, very early goal last week and then a very, very late goal from my least favourite Santich, Christian Santich. We love you, Daniel. Very, very late on. What is the go with this Knights team, Tommy? Is this a defensively solid, miserly unit that we can expect similar to the Stirling of last season? Or again, am I going a bit early on this?
No, I think so. I watched this game back on Saturday night, and it was a very tight game. Inglewood hit the post in the first half. There was a long-range effort, which also tested the goalkeeper. But basically, the margins were pretty fine at both ends across the board. And ultimately, it was that late goal. It was across from the left. Jesse Lazaro got a touch on it, and Christian Santic slid in at the back post to put it into the back of the net. So I think that's going to be the operation for Western Knights this season, is to keep games tight and back the class they have to deliver in games. So, yeah, awesome for the Knights to be riding high, top of the league, 2 wins from 2, the only 100% record. Inglewood, though, back-to-back 0-1 defeats. And as you say, Sean, and geez, that's a big game on Friday night now, isn't it? They're playing Perth Soccer Club, or Thursday night rather, because it's on the Thursday before Good Friday. And both of those teams, 0 points, bottom of the league. No one's going to want to go 0-3.
Absolutely. Kelechi, speaking of going 0-3, Kelechi has also just confirmed that it is 1 from 3 that Friday Zico claimed that he will score. So if anyone wants to go back and track the Friday Zico shots for the season, 1 out of every 3 from outside of the box. That man thinks he will score. I don't know where to start with the guy. I absolutely love him to bits. I also love Christian Santich to bits. Let me be very clear. He's just never sorted out my audio-visual issues at the Coburn Awards night, whereas Daniel has. So that's why he's my favourite Santich. But we love all the Santiches. We love all of the listeners. And before we leave, is there anything that you, Josh, or that you, Tommy, I want to say to our wonderful, beautiful, extraordinary listeners before we wrap up this week 2 in the NPL?
I just have, to touch on Inglewood for just a second from that night's game. Obviously, two games without a goal, and they are feeling not having a striker up top, I think, at the moment. Kitari Yamamoto, who they got over from Bakata, he's been injured, and I think they're really praying that they can get him back as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and I think it's just worth touching on the news that was confirmed today. There was obviously some murmurs at the end of last week and over the weekend that Danny Hay was going to be moving on from Perth Soccer Club to take on it.
Absolute, my absolute apologies, ladies and gentlemen. This is a huge story. Tommy I will let you give your thoughts. But Danny Hay out, heading back over the seas, and the great Kenny Lowe taking over. What's the go there, Tommy?
Yeah, so Danny Hay has departed Perth Soccer Club to take an opportunity with the new Auckland A-League side as an assistant coach, I believe. So probably an opportunity for Danny that he couldn't turn down. It was something that obviously Auckland had put on their social media today confirming it, and Perth have also confirmed it in on their social media as well. So it was announced that Kenny Lowe is going to come in, and probably a smart move from the Azzurri. Perth have sort of cultivated this young group of players with a bit of a point to prove, some ex-Glory players who Kenny Lowe would know, and who are looking to sort of grow and maybe take the next steps in their career. So Kenny's going to be a very good replacement to come in there and build on that work Danny's done. I'm certain of that. And I believe Kenny Lowe's first game will be on April 13 against Balcatis. So there will be a handover period over the next fortnight. And I think Danny Hay will be in the dugout for at least the next couple of games.
All right. Best of luck to Kenny. Best of luck to Perth and the rest of the NPL. Thank you for once again throwing up the most unpredictable first two rounds of a season that we could ever inspect. I just cannot wait for the rest of this season, guys. Any more for any more? Two shakes of the head, listeners. We love you. Great to be back in your ear holes. We'll be back here next week. Bye from me.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.